Hey, folks, thanks for tuning back in to the CBSSports.com College Football Podcast. I am Chip Patterson, and it is time to rewind what was an unbelievable Week 10. So joining me once again, Mr. Tom Fornelli. Tom, how good? I mean, this was one of those, and I know it was like late at night, and we were all exhausted from a full day of football, but this Saturday really was one of those, like, damn, I am so happy that we get to watch this incredible sport. Because it was just a fantastic day from about noon Eastern time right up until 2 a.m. when those Pac-12 and the San Diego State-Boise State games were ending.
Yeah, this was one of those Saturdays where by the time it was done, you kind of just wanted to sit in a chair with a cigarette in one hand and a glass of scotch in the other. it was a great Saturday just in the fact that not only, you know, they were great games, but there were also games in which, you know, the undefeated teams like Alabama and Notre Dame trailed late in their games and came back. And Oregon looked fantastic against USC, but that game was never really, you know, over until the fourth quarter. And then Kansas State struggled with Oklahoma State for a little bit, and Colin Klein got hurt, so that added intrigue to the game. So it was, even though all the four main undefeated teams won, along with Louisville, who's also undefeated and won, but we'll get to that later, it was interesting games. There were no blowouts. It was just a great Saturday of football.
Yeah, it really, and obviously you hit on the four headliners. You've also got Texas A&M got it kicked off early, just running wild on Mississippi State. And the Aggies, you know, it is not just get past LSU and the Tide are cruising. Alabama does have to play Texas A&M. We still got that coming up ahead of us. Georgia Ole Miss was even interesting for a little bit before Georgia came out with a great second half. Texas found a defense maybe and got a win against Texas Tech, making the Big 12, everything below Kansas State seems kind of jumbled. It's just but really one of those every conference title race and every, you know, the battle at the top, there's all these different there's so much left to be played, but we only have 3 weeks left. So of all the different teams, especially you could pick one of the four teams at the top or not, who are you most surprised by seeing them struggle?
What shocked me was that LSU had, 435 total yards of offense against Alabama. And when you think of teams where it's like, you know, if any offense is going to finally break through against Alabama, LSU was not the offense that you thought it would be. Zach Mettenberger had a career night, threw for nearly 300 yards almost against that defense. And it's just that came as a shock. And then especially because Alabama really, A.J. McCarron really didn't play all that well on offense on the other side of it either. If you look at the statistics in that game, I mean, let's see, LSU had the 435 total yards and was 10 for 20 on third down. Bama was 1 for 9. A.J. McCarron was 14 for 27 for 165 yards. Mettenberger had 298 yards. And just looking at the box score, you're sitting there thinking, how the hell did LSU lose this game? And, of course, if you watch the game, you know it's because Les Miles is Les Miles, and he's going to do crazy, insane things.
Is that where you're putting this game on Les Miles?
I definitely think, yeah, he deserves. I mean, there is a lot of things LSU did wrong in that game. The decisions on fourth down, the fake field goal was dumb because everybody watching knew it was coming. Then going for it on fourth and one, where I wasn't really a big fan of the decision because I felt the field goal at least made Alabama have to score a touchdown, and in the end it wouldn't have mattered because that's exactly what Alabama did. But still, if you're going to go for it on fourth and one there, you're going to run the wildcat right up the middle into the heart of Alabama's defense. That makes sense to you? Is the best play call? I mean, I know you're sitting there saying, you want your offensive line. You trust them to win that battle, but I would try a little, you know, you're Les Miles. If you're into tricking people, don't do something that's so painfully obvious in a painfully obvious situation like that. And then at the end of the game, I mean, how many times do we have to say it? The prevent defense only prevents you from winning. And like last week when I got out of Wisconsin for dropping back into a shell coverage against Michigan State to let them move down the field and win the game, That's exactly what LSU did to Alabama last night. And the only time LSU did put pressure and call a blitz on that drive that I could recall was when Alabama actually called the screen pass. Yeah. So it's like Alabama knew it was coming at that point. Once they got to about the 25-30, Alabama says, okay, they're going to stop dropping it and come after us. And Saban calls the screen pass, and they called it at the perfect time, and Gildan, you know, broke some tackles and made his way to the end zone.
It was the best all-around game that LSU had played the entire season. They brought their best. That was Zach Mettenberger's absolute best. He had all of his power-ups. He had all of his attributes were pumped up on the Game Shark by 5. He was the best Zach Mettenberger that he could be, and they lost that game. That was the thing that was so amazing to me, is how well the Tigers played and how phenomenal the game was. I mean, I thought it was, the game of the – I liked the game in the regular season last year. I know there weren't the touchdowns, but I thought it was a very well-played game. The title game was a little weird. It had a strange feeling to it, just – for the way that LSU was just dominated by Alabama's defense. I think of the last 3 games in the last calendar year, this one was my favorite.
Yeah, I was going to say, if last night's game had been played last year during the regular season, nobody has a problem with the title game rematch. Everybody and their mother, you know, Oklahoma State fans would have been asking for a title game rematch if that game was played last year. And another thing about last night's game of the two that I wanted to touch on is, you know, after McCarron led that drive to get Alabama the win, everybody's saying, you know, like I saw people on Twitter, people are writing about it today, how it's McCarron vaulted himself into the Heisman race. And I don't understand how that's possible, because if McCarron hadn't played terribly in the second and third quarter, he's never in a position to have to make that drive anyway. So I don't get what A.J. McCarron did to become a Heisman candidate after last night.
Yeah, if
through a screen pass.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. You either are trying so hard, and it was cool. I got to talk with Chris Houston, our Heisman pundit, about this last week, is that the Heisman moment transcends college football. It is a term that all of sports can kind of understand and rally behind. And I mentioned to him, it came as we were talking about what you were saying, where you're listening to a radio hosts that have Heisman votes. And they're sitting here talking, pretty much admitting they've hardly watched any downs of college football. They have no idea who Colin Klein is or why he's at the top of the Heisman race or if Kansas State's even good. And so many people want to use that term Heisman moment. So many people want to be able to tab that. It wasn't a Heisman moment for McCarron. All it was a very public moment of success that people who viewed him as a Heisman contender wanted to jump on. If you think that that was his Heisman moment, you had already thought that he was in the Heisman conversation. I understand the argument for A.J. McCarron being in the Heisman conversation, but I don't think it was at all from what happened against LSU. I think that's just the efficiency, the what he's been able to do for that offense and his body of the work on the season. And as a leader of one of the better teams, I understand all that, but I don't think that that was a Heisman moment, and I don't think this puts him anywhere on the same caliber as far as outstanding players in college football. He has not been as outstanding, in my opinion, as Colin Klein has been.
Yeah, I mean, if A.J. McCarron is not the quarterback on the number one team in the country and he has the same numbers, is he even being discussed as a Heisman guy?
Maybe Davy O'Brien, but yeah, you're right. Not Heisman. I'll tell you.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say, I'll tell you who did legitimately put himself right back there in the Heisman conversation was Oregon State running back Kenyon Barner, with a school record 321 yards rushing, 5 touchdowns, and just absolutely running wild on the Trojans. And for any criticisms of Oregon State's defense, I think that was just kind of the nature of this game, especially those yards add up when you have 80 and 90 yard touchdown passes to Marquise Lee.
See, I feel differently about that. I've heard all year from, you know, I mean, listen, Oregon is a very good football team. Let's get that off the way right now. And they deserve to be number two in the polls and number three in the BCS. They deserve everything. They deserve all the plaudits they get. They're a wonderful football team. And they play offense like we do on our PlayStations on Rookie. That's what they look like when they have the ball. But you can't tell me Oregon has a good defense and say it was the nature of yesterday's game, because good defenses do not give up 615 yards of offense and 51 points. I mean, USC got 7.59 yards per play last night and scored on 8 of their 13 possessions. Good defenses don't do that. Good defenses have off nights. Alabama had an off night. Alabama didn't give up 600 yards and 50 points. That's a defense that has been living on, you know, let's be real, mediocre competition before last night. And USC was the first real offense. And you can say Arizona was a real offense, but look what UCLA did to Arizona last night, if you want to make that comparison. USC was the first real offense that Oregon played this year, and USC moved up and down the field on them just like we've seen teams do to Oregon in the past. So while Oregon's defense might be improved this year, it's still not a good defense. That's what last night proved to me.
I think last night we will get a great opportunity. We still got Stanford, and that is a very different team to defend, and it will be one that does not play to Oregon's favor on defense with that sort of physical, brutal, just downhill rushing attack. They've got Hogan under center, seem to be improving that offense with the change at quarterback. I understand. I'm going to stick with, I think the Oregon's defense is better than that game proved. I will say that the thing about the Arizona game wasn't just the shutout, but I like the idea of them being able to force the turnovers. And I don't know. It's definitely worthy of a concern.
Oh, no, I don't think Oregon's defense is as bad as it looked last night. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is I've been hearing all year from people that Oregon's defense is good to great, and last night proved to me that it is nowhere near great. It might be above average, and it might be better than it has been, but it's nothing close to great.
What did Kansas State's win cement? Do you have them as the number two team? Did that win cement where the way that you look at them, or how did it affect your view of the Wildcats?
It didn't really change it. I've thought Kansas State's been the second-best team. It deserved to be the second-best team for just about all year now. So last night's win didn't really prove anything, although I think what I liked most about that win for them last night was Colin Klein really didn't have that great of a game. He only had the one touchdown, and he got hurt. Whether it was the wrist or the concussion, nobody knows. Time will tell. But they still won that game, and they won it pretty resoundingly. You know, it was over at halftime, basically. So I'm impressed just that they were able to have an off night. And it was a typical Bill Snyder coached game in that Oklahoma State, you know, outgained Kansas State. But the score, you know, was that big. And it's because Oklahoma State turned the ball over five times. And that's exactly what Kansas State does to you on defense. They turn the ball over. So I think last night being able to play that well, you know, when Colin Klein wasn't at his best, is just another indication of that team is not just Colin Klein. It's Colin Klein on offense, but the offense itself is good with Hubert and those receivers. The special teams are great, and that defense is great. That is a very well-rounded team that is good everywhere you look, and that's why it's number two, and that's why I don't see them losing. So I think it's going to come down to we're going to have an interesting situation, because of the four teams that are undefeated that quote-unquote count as far as the title is concerned, I think that Notre Dame is probably the most likely to lose a game, but I don't see Oregon or Kansas State losing. So unless Alabama loses, I think we could be looking at a situation where we have an undefeated team getting left out, a la Auburn.
Yeah, and this is an undefeated team, like you're saying, like in 2004. This is an undefeated team that has an argument to be in that game all across the country. I mean, there will be people going nuts. This isn't like you got to give the undefeated TCU team a shot. I mean, no offense to that TCU team, but these are going to be, you know, either the Big 12, the Pac-12, or you know, the biggest independent program in all of FBS, and there will be a lot of people that are going to have something to say about it. And that's everyone's going to be. I mean, Tom, you know, everyone's going to feel like they're getting screwed, right? No matter what.
Oh, yeah. And what's actually funny is if that does happen, you know, in 2004 when it happens, it was a huge, it was a big reason for the whole playoff push for people. I mean, people have always wanted playoffs, but that 2004 year really started putting the playoff talk in motion where it became, you know, everybody started wanting it. It became a thing where everybody, you know, the media really started pounding on the idea then. But now if it happened, I mean, what can you do? The playoffs are already coming. It's just now everybody's got to sit there and deal with it because we know we have to wait.
Man, if when LSU was leading and it looked like they had it going, it was really, really funny to think of just in those moments about a BCS title game without an SEC team and what that would mean for Paul Feinbaum's radio show for, I don't know, an entire month.
There's, I mean, I think even, you know, the nonpartisan college football fans, the media members, everybody that isn't affiliated with an SEC program or isn't like an SEC booster had to be happier than hell when LSU was winning that game. It looked like Alabama was losing because I think we've all finally been waiting to for a year where we can be like, ha-ha, the SEC's not in there. Just because they've been so good that for people outside the SEC, it'd be nice to have a year where they're not involved. But, I mean, the SEC's been there every year for a reason, and that's because it's pretty damn good, and it looks like it's going to be there again this year.
Yeah, and for the record, Tom and I are it's only a criticism of the situation, not of anything. I mean, like we just said, the best football game that I've watched this season. If we were to redo that midseason vote right now, I think I'd have to go with Saturday night's game down in Death Valley.
That's my favorite game.
I want to hit this. You said of those four teams, we could be looking at a couple being unbeaten. What is going to happen with Louisville? Because if you want to talk about public perception, Louisville is just getting dogged right now. Everybody's talking about the four unbeatens, but the Big East is still a BCS automatic qualifying conference. And Louisville is four. They got four wins down. They got three conference games left. And it looks like they should be able to take care of Syracuse and Connecticut. They could slip up. I mean, remember, Louisville has only been 9-0. This is the first time Louisville's ever been 9-0. This is historic land for them, and normally they will have slipped up by now. So what is the ceiling for Louisville? Do you foresee anything better than – is there anything better than Orange Bowl? Should Louisville fans want anything more than Orange Bowl?
I don't think – I mean, realistically, I don't – even if they went out, I just – don't know that there's enough there that Louisville can even consider thinking of getting to the title game unless everybody loses twice somehow. Because I think that one loss SEC teams would definitely be ranked higher in the BCS than an undefeated Louisville. And it's not a knock on Louisville because Louisville's a good team, but it's more if you look at their schedule, not only do they not have like a, you know, a win that says, wow, I mean, the Cincinnati win was nice, but even that was a 3-point win in overtime. The North Carolina win was nice, but that was the one where they had a huge lead and let North Carolina back into the game. Really, besides the first week against Kentucky and Missouri State, and then this week against Temple, they haven't blown anybody out. They've not only played mediocre to poor competition, but, I mean, they've kept them in games. And that's why I feel like if Louisville tripped up in the last week, because they go to Rutgers for the last game of the season, Rutgers isn't a bad team either. If they tripped up there, I wouldn't be shocked. But even if they didn't trip up, I just don't think there's enough on that resume to work. Anybody's going to put the Cardinals over like a one-loss Alabama or a one-loss Georgia or even a one-loss Oregon.
That game at Rutgers, we might venture out. This is a warning. We're going to venture into Big East territory for a couple minutes.
Warning, Big East.
That last game at Rutgers is on a Thursday night, and both teams play on that Saturday. Rutgers plays Cincinnati, and I think Louisville plays Connecticut. Cincinnati's a decent team. Don't know what's going to happen there, but I am just – that is a very interesting just sort of scenario to walk into the biggest game of the Big East season one that, in my opinion, will determine who wins the Big East title and who gets that BCS bowl bid. Because, like, you're right. When you look at everything else that Louisville has, if they do lose, you know, they could be going that one game. If they enter that one game with Rutgers, they could be number 8 or number 7 in the BCS standings, lose that game, and all of a sudden find themselves playing in the Belt Bowl. I mean, this is like one of those strange situations where in the process of 4 days, a short week, you got to get together your prep, and both teams have to do it, which is, there's not going to be one team that has more of an advantage. You say, obviously, the Scarlet Knights, since they don't have to travel, possibly have that advantage. But, man, it's you've liked watching – you've watched some Rutgers games this year. They're both good teams. I'm really excited about that one. In the Big East world, that's our game of the century that we got circled on that Thursday night.
If this isn't the Big East in a microcosm, it's the Big East. Basically, their championship game will be played on a Thursday night. If that's the most Big East thing possible, I don't know what it is. But you're right. Louisville and Rutgers are both good football teams, and I think they get dismissed just because they are Big East, and recently the Big East has been not very good. But these are two teams that, while they're not the upper echelon elite, they're two good football teams, and that's going to be a very entertaining game that I recommend that even those who are scared of the Big East, and understandably so, you tune in on that Thursday night.
Yeah, no, absolutely going to be a big one to watch. All right, let's hit on the Irish, Tom. There were about 4 or 5 different moments where Notre Dame surely had the game lost, but yet they still continued to come back. Eventually, obviously, win in 4 overtimes. What about that game made you? Is there anything about that game that is going to let you dismiss it, or is there anything from that game that is concerning moving forward, even though the opponents that are left are Boston College and Wake Forest before that game against USC?
The only thing about that game yesterday that surprised me was that it happened against Pitt and not Boston College. That's like Jerry said on the podcast on Wednesday for the Picks podcast, Notre Dame, every game at home this year has been one of, it's like it's in MDC's contract. Every Notre Dame home game has to be dramatic beyond all, necessity. And that was a game where, to be honest, Notre Dame should not have won that game. And not just, they were down 20-6. And the only reason they came back to win that game was because of a terrible pass interference call on Quan Williams. And it was a 4th and 5. And he got called for a pass interference that did not happen against Tyler Eifert. And that gave Notre Dame another first down. The Irish scored a play later. And at that moment, the entire momentum and entire mood of that stadium shifted because that crowd was dead quiet because everybody there knew that the dream of 2012 was about to end right in front of them to freaking Pitt after beating Oklahoma the week before. Then that pass interference flag came out. They scored a play later, and that place got loud, and it did not stop being loud for the rest of the night and through the third overtime. So Notre Dame caught that huge break with the pass interference. Then they Sierra Wood. A second after I tweet, I don't know why Notre Dame just doesn't give Sierra Wood the ball in every play at this point.
He fumbled.
He fumbles at the goal line, literally a second after I tweet that. And then, of course, as we know, this Kevin Harper, who was 4 for 5 on the night for field goals, that fifth one was kind of important there in the second overtime, misses a chip shot. Where once he missed that field goal, you knew Notre Dame was going to win it in the third overtime because it was like you could practically just see Pitt fall down and die on the sidelines when that thing went wide right. So that was a game where Notre Dame didn't really deserve to win, and they definitely caught a few breaks, but teams every year catch breaks. It's the teams that take advantage of those breaks that generally end up at the top at the end of the season, and Notre Dame took advantage of the breaks that it got. And came back, from a 14-point deficit late in the fourth quarter. That's not easy to do. But still, yeah, that I think it's an omen that at some point, seeing what USC did to Oregon last night, because Ray Graham had a huge night. That Notre Dame defense didn't really look all that great yesterday because Ray Graham rushed for 172 yards and was averaging over 7 yards a carry. So seeing what USC did to Oregon, I think when Notre Dame travels to L.A. to end the season, at this point, I'm expecting USC to win that game.
of all of in all right, well, here, I'm gonna put you on the spot. What's instead of just going classic honor roll here, let's go surprise. What was a one player or team that particularly surprised you in a pleasant way, and one in a that you were disappointed by in a very up and down and interesting Saturday?
Well, the team that surprised me the most was UCLA, because I picked UCLA to win that game. And it's like I said, I felt that game could have gone either way, but I picked UCLA to win because they were at home. But I mean, the Bruins just put a hurting on Arizona. Like that game was never in doubt. UCLA jumped out to a lead early and then just kept their foot on the gas the entire time. And I think that's good news for the Pac-12 and good news for Oregon, especially because after beating USC last night, kind of hurts USC's value as far as strength of schedule goes, because the Trojans have now lost three games, and if they somehow did lose to Notre Dame to the year, they've lost four games, and they're going to end up not ranked at that point, which would hurt Oregon's strength of schedule. But if UCLA keeps playing like it did last night, and there's a Pac-12 title game rematch that we all knew was coming between Oregon and UCLA up at Duquesne again, that only boosts Oregon's, you know, street cred, like, you know, if you want to put it that way. So that would only help Oregon leap over a Kansas State team, which wouldn't be playing that weekend, by the way. It would help them jump Kansas State in the BCS polls if they hadn't already by then. So I think Oregon should be very happy with what UCLA did last night, too.
Yeah, that's and there is a certain viewer factor to rematches. And especially the way that first game went, I think that you would rather see a UCLA team on the uptick, one that has been playing much better in the last couple weeks. If they continue this and do win the South, then that matchup is much more enticing and much more impressive. You're right, if they do get out there and win. Oh, Kansas State does play on that last weekend. Notre Dame doesn't.
Oh, that's true. I'm sorry. My mistake.
No. But
there's not the Big 12 championship. That's what I was thinking of, a championship week.
Well,
Big 12 does play late.
I was going to say, I forgot about this. That's Kansas State against Texas. If Texas, would you, I know we're running a little bit long, but do you think that Texas game was just pulling it together for Texas Tech? Or do you think that this is, going to be a good sign for a strong finish for the Longhorns?
I don't know if I'm considering it a circling the wagons type game. It was definitely it was a good performance, especially compared to what we've seen from Texas defensively the last few weeks. But I mean, I'm starting to wonder if Texas Tech might not have just been, because that win, Texas Tech's win over Kansas or over West Virginia doesn't look nearly as strong anymore. Its win over TCU is looking a little weaker every week. So I don't know if Texas Tech was as good as we might have thought they'd been. But, I mean, still, it was an important win for Texas, and I think Texas is going to win its next two games against Iowa State and TCU, setting up for a huge game against Kansas State, because Texas should be 9-2 going into it. But I still see that being a game where Kansas State's going to have a good time, a nice, easy time with the Longhorns. But now that you mention it, with Texas being 9-2, that would help Kansas State's chances all that much more, too.
I know. It's crazy. All right, we got UCLA as a team surprise to you. What was a team or player that you were disappointed by?
I covered the Missouri-Florida game Saturday morning to help Jerry out while he was covering Texas A&M and Mississippi State. And Florida won, but that is 2 weeks in a row where I've watched Florida play football. And it is not fun to watch. It's just that team has not been impressive at all. And if it wasn't for James Franklin throwing four interceptions, Florida does not win that game, because Missouri was actually moving the ball down the field relatively easily on the Gators' defense. It's just Franklin kept turning it over in the red zone. So that was a game that Florida, really didn't deserve to win, but they won. And like I was saying about Notre Dame, good teams win games they don't deserve to win too. But still, that Florida team, every week that goes by, impresses me just a little bit less.
My disappointment, it was in some Big Ten officials, because a game that I wrote that I covered for that I took while you were switched and got Pittsburgh Notre Dame. It was Michigan State. Denard, he had two interceptions, and he was the player of the game in my mind. I was sitting there with my game notes as it's running. I'm typing on my notepad little one-liners, starting to put them together, and then he makes the most incredible pass breakup in the end zone, and he gets flagged for defensive pass interference. It sets Nebraska ends up winning the game, and suddenly we go from Michigan State forces three Taylor Martinez turnovers and opens up the race to Nebraska wins. And I think you've seen the replay since then, haven't you? You don't think it was defensive pass interference?
No, it wasn't defensive pass interference. That was a not good call, let's put it that way. But I think we're all used to seeing terrible calls on pass interference because pass interference is the most nebulous rule in the history of football.
Yeah. And then my other my surprise was also right there in the late slot. You got to keep more eyes on it than I did, but I was doing the thing with Oregon State where on the channel flipper I'm watching Boise State, San Diego State. It's terrible. First of all, Boise State special teams woes are not stopping. Whether it's missed field goals where they blow winning the Mountain West last year, or missed field goals several times over the last couple years. This year it was against San Diego State, two of the Aztecs touchdowns. One of them was a 100-yard kickoff return on the opening kickoff for a touchdown. The other, they had a blocked punt that rolled out of bounds at the 8-yard line, set up a short San Diego State touchdown. It's they cannot seem to stop stubbing their toe. Very disappointing. But I was pleasantly surprised by Oregon State's ability to just win. I don't really know how they do it, but
nobody does. They don't beat themselves, I think, is what it comes down to. They're not spectacular at anything, but they don't beat themselves. And you know what? Well, I forgot. There's another surprise team I want to mention. You went to the Big Ten, and I forgot to even mention it, and I feel terrible about it. I just want to give props to the Indiana Hoosiers for keeping their leaders' division hopes championships alive. And it sets up for winner-take-all against Wisconsin this weekend. That's right. The Big Ten game of the week is Wisconsin versus Indiana, and it will settle a division title.
Good God. Who are you giving?
That's the Big Ten for you, baby.
What do you see? I'm not going to ask for necessarily a game score, but what are your keys to the game in an initial read?
For Indiana, Wisconsin?
I asked for the Big Ten game of the week, Tom. I'm asking for...
I'd say the key to the game will be that Indiana needs to learn how to stop the run and fast because Indiana's been terrible against the run on defense all year, and that kind of plays into Wisconsin's hands. But at the same time, I'm not sure how Wisconsin's defense can handle that Indiana offense. So this feels like a game to me that not only could be important, but could actually be a tennis match kind of fun game to watch too, which you're not expecting in the Big Ten. But I think it could develop into something like that where Monty, whatever he's calling himself this week, finally has the game that we've expected from him all year against Indiana's defense. But then I could see the Badgers giving up 500 to 600 yards of offense just as easily.
Well, I don't know if you meant to, but you've got me sold right now because that's the kind of game that I want to see at like November 10th amidst all of amidst all this stuff. You've got to have some... You just got to have some wacky shit happen sometimes.
Listen, the Big Ten is terrible. The Big Ten is also terrible and entertaining this year, where people are just dismissing it because it's terrible. But that terrible leads to fun. It leads to laughs. It leads to enjoyment. It's like a movie that's so bad it's good.
Yeah. It's like anything that's going to be coming on USA on a Saturday afternoon in the summer.
It's like NBC's fall television lineup. It's so bad, you kind of laugh.
All right. Be sure to keep it here at CBSSports.com. We've got another week full of podcasts. We'll be talking with Jeremy Fowler, Dennis Dodd. Tom will join me again for the Weekend Picks panel with Jerry Hennin. And be sure to follow us, of course, on Twitter at IonCFB. You can get all of the Ion College football news and analysis throughout the week. And be sure also to subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes. Be sure to let us know what you think. Give us a suggestion, and you can email us at podcast@cbsinteractive.com. For Tom Fornelli, I'm Chip Patterson. Thanks so much for listening.